Malcolm Turnbull announced that the laws of maths do not apply here.
One of my favourite brands of comedy, Ariel, is brown people and black people making fun of white people.
Senators have been dropping like flies recently.
Shouting out the fact that in the Knowles Carter family, women just have one name.
Back chat on FBI Radio.
Back chat on FBI Radio 94.5, the freshest rap of news and politics on your airwaves. I'm Osman Faruqi.
And I'm Ariel Bogle.
And this is the first ep of the new and revamped Backchat. Very exciting. Today on the show, we'll be joined in the studio by BuzzFeed Australia's Lane Sainty to talk about the politics behind the sudden gear shift in the Australian marriage equality debate. Are we going to have a plebiscite? Is it going to be through the post? What the hell's the post? How do you even send mail? I have no idea, but Lane will tell us all about how to send post and a lot more. Stick around as Lane explains it all.
Yes, but first we just have to talk about the now infamous leaked transcript of the phone conversation between Trump and Turnbull. Of course, this made waves a few months ago. Just after Trump had been inaugurated, the Washington Post ran a story saying Trump and Turnbull had had a huge fight during the phone call over the issues of refugees. And notoriously, Trump thought it was the worst phone call ever on a day that he'd called Putin and a bunch of other world leaders. Well, yesterday the Post got its hand on the full transcript of that conversation, and it was pretty spicy. The conversation revolves mostly around Turnbull trying to send refugees Australia's been locking up in offshore detention to the US. Those are all the poor souls on Manus Island. And this was a deal he'd worked out with Barack Obama, of course. Trump, not so into it. This conversation is just kind of mind-blowing. You can see that what happens behind the scenes, a bit of blind leading the blind. What do you reckon?
Totally, yeah. It's hard. Like, it was a lot of Australian journalists who said that, oh, no, this shows that Malcolm Turnbull, you know, he's a fantastic negotiator. He did a great job of standing up to the president of the US and he represented. But I don't think there are winners in this conversation
no
at
winners.
All. Like, the premise of it is Malcolm Turnbull trying to do this deal to get refugees off Nauru. And the funny thing about reading the transcript is you kind of just you can hear Donald Trump's incredulous like response to what he's hearing. He's like, hang on, at one point he's like, why don't you integrate these people into your society? And then as Turnbull explains Australia's refugee policy, he's like, wow, this is like worse than me. It's quite extraordinary.
It is weird. And the other weird thing I thought, like, a lot of people were like, oh, it's when you read the transcript, you can see Turnbull standing up for Australia and, you know, being a diplomat. And the thing is with Trump, I'm not saying that there's any way to really sort of manage him, but Turnbull definitely went in the wrong way. He went in pretty hard with Trump, and obviously that tactic does not work. It's not worked with anybody, you know, trying to sort of stiff arm Trump into taking refugees. Not the way to do it, I don't think.
Yeah, and the wash-up for the refugees on Mount Sinai, like, no one really knows. They're still languishing there. The government is trying to get them out of the detention centres into these so-called transit centres. But the US has kind of hit pause on processing them. So the deal, it's a bit frozen. We don't know what's going on. Look, the phone conversation and the transcript that leaked sucked all the oxygen out of the news cycle yesterday. But at the start of the week, we actually got some pretty interesting info about the government's heavily criticised internship program. The PATH scheme, which stands for Prepare, Trial and Hire, and they've just thrown in an A because the word PATH
sounds
better.
They want it to say PATH.
Yeah, rather than the PTH scheme. It involves the government paying young job seekers currently on welfare the princely sum of $100 a week to intern in the retail and hospitality sector. And it's been likened to slavery by the Australian Council of Trade Unions. And even though businesses get paid $1,000 for every intern they take on, there's been very little take-up of the program. The government's still spending a lot of time and energy promoting it. And this week, they announced an agreement with the Australian Hotels Association to get 10,000 young people to intern in pubs and clubs for the extremely generous rate of $4 an hour. Ariel, what are these kids going to do in pubs and clubs?
Well, one imagines they'll be pulling beers, just like all the pub workers who get full wages. I have worked in a pub at uni and I did not know I was interning at the time. I thought I was just working. It's very weird, and, you know, I feel like we need a siren or a little buzzer to push whenever there's yet another round of worker exploitation by the government and private enterprise, because this comes in a backdrop of quite a few other stories of exploitation. This week, The Guardian had a really powerful story about workers who had been flown in from the Pacific, from East Timor, from Papua New Guinea, who are working up in Queensland on farms, basically doing the jobs of picking fruit and things that are, you know, other Australians just aren't into. But of course, they, like we hear over and over, are getting exploited. There's some cases going forward about wage loss, bad conditions. you know, just give the worker a break, man.
Yeah, and rather than, like, you know, there's a lot of criticism of the government not acknowledging those issues or potentially not funding the ombudsman to investigate them enough, and instead creating these new things like the Path Internship Program that potentially set up the stage for even more exploitation.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we'd love to hear from anyone who's, you know, on this PATH program. Are you having a good time or a bad time? It'd be good to get some actual perspectives from people who are involved in it. If you've got any opinions at all, text us in 0409-945-945. And one thing that was pointed out when PATH was first floated last year, I think, you know, Labor and the unions were pointing out that some of the companies that had signed up to give internships, quote unquote, to young workers had just been going through, you know, court cases of their own where they had been accused of paying workers less than what they were owed to the tunes of hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, you know, not the most princely companies signing up to these PATH schemes either.
Yeah, and look, to be honest, like, there was a lot of cynicism about this scheme because people questioned whether they would actually be getting skills from these businesses that signed up, or they'd just be giving them free labour. I think the pub thing has belled the cat on that. I think, like, what's, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with working in a pub, but as you said, Ariel, like, that's a job.
Yes.
Like, you know, pouring beers and picking up glasses and cleaning dishes or whatever, that's a job, and you should get paid the award rate at the least for that job.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that, oh, well, we'll just get these interns to do it and we'll give them skills about what it's like to work in a small business, like, that's a joke.
Right, and the government's point was that this was meant to be a path to a full-time job, and the companies that offer these internships, if they end up hiring some of these people, get an extra sort of couple of 10 grand bonus, I think.
Like, that's quite right.
A bit
yeah,
of money.
Yeah, yeah.
But nevertheless, I think the latest stats were that only 200 full-time jobs had been offered so far through this program, which is not that many.
It's tiny. And yeah, the government says they wanted 100,000 successful internships over 4 years, and they're not close to that at all.
Yes, troubling times for the youth.
Yeah, look, and coming up next on Backchat, we're going to be joined by Lane Sainty from BuzzFeed Australia, talk through all the manoeuvring going on in Parliament this week and coming up next week on the issue of marriage equality. You know, we thought that the plebiscite issue was the Liberals' policy, but there's been some developments this week, I guess, to do with so-called rebel MPs, which makes them sound like characters out of Star Wars.
So I feel weird because we're either as close to having marriage equality in Australia as we've ever been in our whole lives, or as far away as ever. The past week has been packed with rumblings about whether a cohort of so-called rebel Liberal MPs could force a free vote in Parliament on the issue. If that happened, they could cross the floor and vote with Labor and legalise same-sex marriage once and for all. And there was actually a weird moment this week when one of those MPs, Tim Wilson, refused to engage on the issue despite all the fevered speculation.
Liberal MP Tim Wilson, he joins us now live from Melbourne. Thanks very much for your company. Do you like the idea of a secret ballot in the party room?
Thanks, Peter. I've said everything I have to say on this issue, and I make no plans to make any other comment at this time. I'd rather talk about something else that actually matters to the Australian population, the economy, energy prices, what's going on with Labor's tax slug. You pick it. I'm happy to talk about it. I've said what I've said on this issue.
Tim Wilson, thanks for your company.
That's all right. Pleasure.
The world's shortest interview.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about anything that matters to Australia, anything that doesn't matter to me. All right, moving on. Of course, the Liberal Party policy so far has been in favour of a marriage equality plebiscite that would let the Australian people vote on whether LGBTQ people should be allowed to legally marry, but the Parliament would still eventually have to vote to actually change the law. The same-sex marriage plebiscite failed to pass the Senate last November due to Labor and a bunch of crossbenchers. And Lane Sainty from BuzzFeed is here to help us work out what the hell is going on right now.
Hey, welcome. Guys. How are you going?
Thanks for coming on Backchat, Lane.
Thanks for having me.
So why is all this in the back in the news this week?
I guess it's back in the news this week. You know, marriage equality is always bubbling along in the Australian consciousness, and I think it will be until it gets legalised.
Right.
But all of the stuff in motion at the moment kind of kicked off a few weeks ago when we had the big fuss over Christopher Pyne saying in a bar that marriage equality might be sooner than everyone thinks. We had Dean Smith, who's the Liberal Senator from Western Australia, revealing that he had been working on a bill. Then the postal plebiscite kind of came back in the news. And then finally, in the past week, we saw a kind of media push on Monday from some of these moderate Liberals. We had Trevor Evans do a story in The Australian. We had Tim Wilson pop up on Sky. And this all happened on Monday. And that kind of brought about this current really fever pitch much speculation that something is going to happen in the next couple of weeks.
And the way that you lay that out, it sounds, looking back, like it was a strategic plan to get this issue on the agenda. Do you think that's the case? Like, we had Christopher Pyne, like you said, he was at a bar at the Star Casino and his comments were recorded and then leaked. But then it was pretty soon after that we had another MP talk about their private members bill. Was that just coincidental, or do you think that this is a bit of a ploy?
I think certainly it being back in the news at the moment is strategic. I don't know that Christopher Pyne's speech and the subsequent leak of that was part of that strategy.
Sure, sure.
But I definitely think, you know, the supporters of this in the parliament and the supporters of this outside the parliament are always talking and working together to launch various media and parliamentary pushes, and as are the opponents, it's worth noting. Like, you know, everyone on both sides is working to political strategies on this.
So there's lots of parts of this, but let's go to just the free vote idea. Like, mm-hmm. Talk us through how that the machinations of that would actually happen in parliament.
Sure. So this, the forced free vote that you've been hearing about a lot, it would, this is kind of like the, you know, you break the emergency glasses and this is what's happening when you kind of realise that the government isn't going to budge from the plebiscite. And so what needs to happen here is in the House, as you guys know, and just for your listeners, there's a very thin majority for the government. So there's just one seat. And that means that it is kind of more possible, it's still hard, but possible in this parliament to take over the House of Representatives if you can get enough Liberal MPs to cross the floor. And so what would happen in a forced vote on marriage equality is that they would need 76 people, so that's you know, half plus one of the House, to suspend standing orders.
Mm-hmm.
If they can get 76 votes, and that would consist of all of Labor, and then, you know, presumably the four crossbenchers who are in favour of marriage equality, plus at least three Liberal MPs, then they could suspend standing orders. And then if you suspend standing orders, you kind of control the agenda of the House. So then they could pull forward a bill on marriage equality and have a vote on it. So that's what would need to happen.
And is that the game? Is that the end result that these so-called Rebel MPs are hoping to get? Are they trying to create a situation where they can cross the floor to vote to suspend standing orders and then ideally for a bill for marriage equality?
I would say they're trying to create a situation where they can convince the party room to have a free vote,
right.
Which is very unlikely. Very, very unlikely.
As opposed to the current position, which is it's a plebiscite or nothing, basically.
Yeah, that's right. The crossing the floor scenario, the important thing to note is that none of the Rebel MPs have actually said on the record, yeah, I would cross the floor to suspend standing orders. They've kind of danced around it. They certainly haven't ruled it out. Mm-hmm. And you know, the speculation has been ongoing, but none of them have actually sat down and said, yeah, I would straight up cross the floor to suspend standing orders. And then the reason they've been kind of hedging their bets on that is because it would be a huge embarrassment for the government, a huge embarrassment for Malcolm Turnbull, if the government was to lose votes on the floor of the House.
And while we're talking about crossing the floor, I think you guys ran a story pointing out that there are a few Labor MPs that might in fact vote the other way. I mean, Labor has a policy, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's a conscience vote until the next election. And there are a few, maybe four Labor MPs that might vote against marriage equality. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So Labor has a conscience vote until 2019. And so in the House, Labor would, we understand that Labor would bind for the suspension of standing orders vote. So every Labor MP would vote in favour of that suspension. But then once the suspension happens and the second vote actually on marriage equality comes up, then Labor would have a conscience vote, which the party has determined they have until 2019.
Right, right. And so the other piece of this is some of the Conservatives in the Liberal Party now pushing the idea of the postal plebiscite. Dutton's been one of the guys out in front of this pushing this. What in the world is postal plebiscite? And I mean, the Liberals lost their plebiscite push last year. What makes them think that a postal one would go better?
So a postal plebiscite, I suppose the reason this idea has come up is because, as you say, the government lost their plebiscite push in the Senate. And the postal plebiscite is kind of a way to, well, you know, it could be a way to circumvent needing to get the legislation through the Senate. That has kind of become murky in the past week. Some advocates have said that they're going to launch a high court challenge about the expenditure of public money. So anyway, the point is just don't take for granted at this point that a postal vote could be held without legislation. To the kind of first part of your question, the way this would run is the government would contract the Electoral Commission to send out ballots to everyone in Australia. You would fill out your ballot and then, you know, post it back via Australia Post, which I think a lot of listeners have probably not spent a whole lot of time in their life doing.
Call me cynical. Like, I mean, I don't think I've ever sent a letter. I can't remember the last time I sent a letter.
Oh, I've sent letters.
I mean,
not
like,
many, but
yeah. And yeah. I'm a bit older. I feel like there are younger people now. Like, you know, they honestly would probably not have received a letter. Like, a teenager's receiving letters, they're not.
Well, that's why like a lot of critics are saying a postal plebiscite would benefit the anti-marriage equality side, because the people more likely to vote for marriage equality in a postal plebiscite are probably the ones who may not even have a fixed mailing address, or may have, you know, like. For a long time, I still got mail sent to my parents' house because I was moving around rentals, this kind of thing, where you don't have a fixed address if you're a bit younger, and those would be the people most likely to
vote. And do you reckon that would be the result, Lane, or do you think it would skew towards conservatives if it was a postal plebiscite?
I did a story a couple of weeks ago where I interviewed a couple of electoral experts, and they said, yes, it would favour the no campaign.
Right.
But it is worth noting that the man I interviewed said that his estimate was that it would be skewed by about 3 or 4 percentage points.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So given the extent to which polling suggests support of marriage equality, you know, 3 or 4 percentage points would still, you know, this is all hypothetical, would still give a yes vote back.
All right, fantastic. Yep. Lane, thank you so much for explaining what is a complex, messy and forever changing situation. We're about to move on to another segment, but just very quickly, just to end this one. Monday afternoon, there's a meeting to kind of finalise what could be happening.
Yeah,
in the Liberal Party room, right?
Yeah, 4 p.m. Monday, there's a Liberal Party room meeting. Later that night, there's a cabinet meeting. And then Tuesday morning, there's a joint party room meeting. So really, you know, be paying attention over that stretch of time, because there's going to be news coming out.
Awesome. That's BuzzFeed Australia's Lane Santee talking to Backchat on FBI 94.5 about all the machinations of marriage equality. She's not going anywhere because we've got a new segment on Backchat called Backchat Roulette.
Excellent.
No, wait for it. Yeah, we won all of our money.
We don't endorse gambling.
We don't endorse gambling at all. This is a new segment where basically Ariel and I and Lane and in future other guests will pick a story that we reckon might have been missed, or even if it got a little bit of traction, probably not the attention that it deserves. So we've been racking our brains all morning, all week, in fact, to find these stories. Lane, what have you got for us?
Well, my story certainly did get attention, but I think maybe not to the extent it deserves. So I think a lot of people this week would have seen a viral tweet that it had the caption, you know, the telly has finally run out of things to knock millennials for. And then there was a screenshot of a headline, and the headline reads, 1 in 8 young people have never seen a cow in real life. And the tweet was really funny. And I was like, what on earth is this story? So I went hunting for the actual story. And it turns out that it's this hilarious survey kind of about country life that was conducted in the UK. and it came up with all these other bizarre statistics as well. So I want to ask you both, do you know what season it's best to grow turnips in?
Winter? I don't know why I think that.
Well,
winter,
I think of them in the potato category, like that they come up from the ground. So
that's not an answer to the question.
No, plant them in like summer, and then you'd like get them out, harvest them in winter.
Oh, good.
Okay. Well, you guys have done slightly better than 90% of UK youth who did not know that turnips are best grown in the winter.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Some of the other stuff in this story is over half of UK youth say it's more than a year since they climbed a tree. Anyway, it's just a really funny article. If you saw that viral tweet, you should go and read the article.
I feel like it's awesome. An unfair thing, again, to like malign youth for. Like, how many UK adults are climbing trees or planting turnips?
The headline sounds really negative, but the story itself is actually kind of like, it's sad. We should give them more opportunities to see the country. Anyway.
Aria, what have you got for us?
Well, so this is not a story that has gone under the radar. Of course, Justin Bieber cancelled his world tour like about 8 days ago now to get in touch with himself. But since then, he's been photographed a lot with his hipster priest, basically. And this is a dude from Hillsong. His name is Pastor Carl Lentz. He just looked like any dude you'd see on the street in Redfern, Brooklyn, wherever. He's, you can imagine. His shirts hang very low.
Is that a theme that Redfern is notorious for?
Yeah, you know, there's like low cuts, low cuts in the front, show those collarbones, that type of thing.
Okay.
What I find interesting is this guy belongs to Hillsong, and I feel like Hillsong may be Australia's most powerful export at the moment. Like, this church is so big. It is so popular in America. It has so many celebrities signed up, and it is basically, in the way that it's using celebrity, the new Scientology. Like, not suggesting that it's got all the sort of bad things that about Scientology also apply to Hillsong, but in the way that it's capitalizing on celebrity, it's very similar, and I find that really interesting, and I'm kind of curious about what's going to turn out next and whether Bieber himself will become a Hillsong priest, because that's actually looking not unlikely.
We've got a big scary countdown coming from Sam, our new EP. I was going to give Sam a fantastic shout out because he's been so great and stepped into it, but after the big clock, man, that's not what I wanted. No, we're having great times here in the studio. The listeners are having a great time. We don't want big scary clocks. But my roulette story of the week, I'm sure everyone remembers Martin Tricchelli, the so-called farmer bro.
Yes.
He was actually convicted overnight on three counts of securities fraud.
Damn.
Which is a big deal. Like, I kind of didn't really know that he was a criminal. I thought he was just a bit of a jerk, and then he bought the Wu-Tang album. But he was taken to court by the US District Attorney because he allegedly defrauded his, well, I guess not allegedly, he's been found guilty on three counts of defrauding his investors. And so there'll be a sentencing hearing, and I think all three of the charges have a maximum sentence of 20 years.
Damn. Wow.
So there you go. Like, I mean, I guess that's a bit of cheating because it's not like news that you missed. It's news that's happening right now. But hopefully it's the first time you've heard of it because it's just kind of broken this morning.
I'd recommend everybody go online and have a look at the courtroom sketches of Martin in court.
Oh, yeah?
They are
good value?
Great.
Fantastic. Look, that's all we've got time for on Backchat. Thank you so much for joining us, Lane.
Thanks for having me.
Lane,
it's great.
We hope you enjoy the new exciting format. A massive shout out to Sam. I'm sorry for making fun of it earlier. Our new EP. Oscar Coleman, Kathy Burris, everyone involved in making the show. You can text in on 0409-945-945. You can tweet us at BackchatFBI. You can hit us up on Facebook. And you can check out our podcast on iTunes.